Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, and although he's not alongside me, he's always with me. Jack Piatelli is in studio.
It's great to be here in studio, and I do miss you. I do. It's a lot better having you here, even though it kills me to admit it that I really enjoy your presence in the studio. I miss you dearly.
I mean, I'm kind of a little choked up from that myself. I am not in studio due to a COVID precaution. But we have a great guest in studio with Jack, Milton Academy head coach Mark Goodrich. How are we doing?
Great. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
You were talking a couple of minutes ago before we got on the air about your team didn't travel to Florida. You thought it was a good thing with this whole COVID situation. You said it really worked out well for your team. I'm jumping the gun and getting right into the conversation.
Yeah, let's go.
I think it's you know, why was it such an advantage staying here versus going away to Florida? Because, you know, we all going to want to go to Florida in the spring.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I think going down to Florida is an awesome experience and an awesome trip. And it's just great for the players and to, you know, team bonding, spending time together on a bus and moving from location to location and, you know, eating meals together. And it's hard to put a, you know, a value on those types of things. So and it's so important. But we, you know, the school did not want us traveling. So we decided to just build a spring break basically in, at Milton using the turf field and, basically trying to recreate a lot of those experiences. So, having meals together was something that we did daily. We did about two sessions a day, out on the turf and had about 2 hours in between where we would have a meal together as a team. And then we'd watch film. And we had a lot of film pre-broken down of some college clips and, you know, getting the defense ready, getting the offense ready, drawing up on the whiteboard things we're going to be doing, which is just important time to have. And then we got out on one of the days and did a 3x tournament with the girls team, which was awesome. Getting both the girls and boys teams out in the field together, just having fun playing lacrosse. And they don't realize how much it's helping, you know, playing with a tennis ball, playing pickup lacrosse. You know, as a coach, I think 3x is great for just development. You're playing actual lacrosse. You're having to manipulate defense as a defender. You're trying to read what's going on, anticipate, and you're trying to fake out a goalie. So you're working on all your skills. And so to having the girls and boys do that together, I thought was great. Then we had some scrimmages at the end of the week that we planned, and we hosted Worcester Academy, and then we went down to Pomfret on Friday, and which was a great experience. Love going down and seeing Coach Sheehan down there, and who's taking an assistant coaching role now, which is interesting to see. But and then on the way back, we stopped and did some paintball. So we got all the boys. We had some pizza at this paintball facility, and then rented the whole place out, and you know, every guy had 300 paintballs, and we did rounds of making teams and just shooting each other with paintballs for about an hour.
Did they get to shoot at you, Coach?
Oh yeah, I was out there. I was 100% out yeah. there.
They wouldn't have gone if you weren't out there.
Yeah. Oh, it was. And so we had both me and Noah Knopp, who's been an awesome coach for me, and he was out there. So we finished with an offense versus defense. We did captains, and we sort of picked teams, which was fun. And it was good. I went out early in my first round. I got shot right in the finger, which didn't feel great. But and then in the second round, I took a much better strategy. I kind of posted up in one of the high tower spots, and just I was able to pick off about three or four of my players, which was a blast. And then and we finished with offense versus defense, and offense won the battle of that, which was good, because his defense has sort of been winning the battle on the field most of the time in practice. But no, that was an awesome experience as a team, just to like be together and have fun together. And I think that's such an important part about on teams and starting to care about one another out there, which makes for a better product on the field lacrosse-wise. And then we finished the week with a doubleheader scrimmage, a little round-robin action with Moses Brown and Duxbury down at Moses Brown, which was great to get two different teams in you know, a two-hour period in the morning. And then we watched Brown play UMass, and that was sort of the end of our our spring break week. So we got to watch some college guys. We got to play some awesome scrimmages, had some fun paintballing, meals together. So, you know, all in all, just the week I thought went really well, you know, logistically, and got what we wanted out of it. And we didn't have to get on a plane and go down to Florida and risk some things. So,
but you bring up a great point. It's so much fun just being a part of a team. Right. And that's really the ultimate. You spent the whole week with your team. You get to know them. They get to know each other. You had fun. And, you know, if you weren't participating in a sport, you would never have that experience. That's a great life experience.
100%. Can't agree more. I mean, I tell my players on a daily basis, like, you know, you're lucky to be, you know, here, one, at the school, and two, to be able to be a part of a team and come out and practice every day. And, you know, and you don't have to come out and practice. You get to come out and practice and be a part of this team and mix it up with the boys every day and battle it out. You know, that's a privilege to be able to go and do. And so, you know, I try to keep that perspective, and keep reminding them that is, you know, that's what it's all about. We're enjoying every single moment, and before you know it, it's going to be over. It's going to be like a couple of us just wishing we could go back and things like that. So
just I'll let you go in one sec, Kyle. I know you have some great questions, but I just want to thank you for bringing up paintball, because I think that's where we're going to host our next podcast. And it's going to be me against Kyle. And I know your money's on me.
It really shouldn't be. Because
a little one-on-one paintball action.
I grew up in the sticks of New Hampshire. We had a paintball field right down the road. So place your bets wherever you want to
practice.
I'm going to freeze mine before we play.
I will say some of the kids who have played paintball before were definitely advanced. It's skills. You get skills just like anything else. And with practice, you get better at it.
Yeah, I think you underestimate my sneakiness. So you're going into your sixth season at Milton Academy, and I know Jack's going to get into your playing career at Hopkins, but going through your bio, one of the things that kind of sticks out to me here is that you worked with Jamie Monroe, who, you know, all of us kind of stat nerd media people are, you know, he's one of us now, and he kind of developed this way of looking at film and teaching the game that, you know, turned into partially 3D lacrosse. And now he has his own, he has his own podcast. He does his own thing. What did you learn from him specifically? Because every time I've talked to him, I've always taken away something like I never thought of at the beginning of the conversation.
Oh, specifically, geez, that's a tough one to make it specifically. I mean, there's so many things. You know, I coached Mount Vista High School with Jamie Monroe. That was my first high school coaching gig. You know, I graduated from Hopkins, 2012, that summer, did a bunch of coaching in the camp circuit. The next thing you know, I met, David Jenkins, and me and Dave Jenkins met, and he basically was like, I want you to work full time for 3D New England. And I ended up starting by going down and working 3D Blue Chip. I'm sure you guys remember 3D Blue Chip. It's amazing to see how many 3D Blue Chip pennies are still like out there and circulating the lacrosse world. But so I went down and worked that event as one of the evaluators, and got to work with Matt Rowley doing that, started building my relationship with him there. And then while I was down there, you know, I spent some time with Jamie Monroe, and that's the first time I met him. And he basically asked me to come to Colorado and coach Mount Vista High School with him. And I mean, I had nothing going on and was like, yeah, that sounds great. We'd love to go to Colorado. I love snowboarding. So I got to go out there in February, and this is literally January was 3D Blue Chip. And the next thing you know, he asked me and a few weeks later, I'm moving out. And luckily, one of my old teammates, Matt Bocklet out in Denver, Colorado, you know, as you know, he's got he's dug in out there and doing a great job in the lacrosse community out there. And he had an extra room in his house and was able to put me up. So it all came together really, really well, and got to spend a season basically coaching. And that was, I think, Jamie Monroe's first season outside of coaching at Denver. So it was just amazing to kind of be a part of that, because he was, you know, going through learning how to coach high school kids different from college kids. And I was learning how to coach in general. But I just spent a lot of summers coaching. So I knew how to coach kids, but not in a season sense and on a team, and how to build a team getting ready to compete. And so that was just a great experience. spending that season with him. I mean, I learned an awful lot as far as X's and O's, how to address the team, how to build leadership, how to create culture. And then right after that season was over, I moved back to Boston and started working full time for 3D New England, and was working out of Matt Rowley's attic with Dave Jenkins. And I ended up getting the head coaching job at Dexter, where I got to continue kind of putting into practice some of the stuff I learned from Jamie, but and then continued to work under Jamie in 3D for, I was there for 5 years. I think he left the, you know, 1 year before I ended up leaving. So for 4 years, he was sort of the, you know, the brain behind 3D lacrosse, and spent a lot of time with him, you know, when he would come out and visit New England, and, you know, just talking shop. And I'll tell you what, we spent a lot of time in Florida at 3D spring break. We talk a lot of lacrosse in the coach's corner, you know, and it's always lacrosse with him. It's always lacrosse. You know, it's hard to get away from, you know, you start talking about other things, and before you know it, you're diving back into, well, what do you think about this play? And what do you think about this move? And which is awesome. His energy for the sport is just, it's kind of unmatched. And I think that was the thing that drew me into, coaching with 3D in the first place, was their attitude was, we don't really necessarily know the best way to coach kids, but we want to find the best way to coach kids. And we're constantly searching for the best way to coach kids. And so they were willing to just learn and adapt and evolve. And that's what I liked about it. It wasn't, this is how we do things. It was, here's how we're going to try to do things, and we're going to continue to try to get better all the time.
Yeah. It's interesting just how connected everything is. I mean, one of the things that I started my career off covering was pro. So if you know Bocklet, unfortunately, you probably heard my name said in with bad words after it, if you talk to Bocklet about stuff I would write. But he's a great influence over there and kind of in that community as well. So it's just interesting how all of the things connect to each other. And you also coached with former podcast guest John Isaf at Memphis. Yeah.
So I did 2 years as a head coach at Dexter Southfield, and it was Dexter back in the day. It wasn't combined as Dexter Southfield at the time, but John reached out to me. They had just won their second state championship in a row in 2015. And so he reached out and basically he said, I got a group of studs on offense and I need some help. And he wanted some help with the offense, and he felt like all these kids, I mean, you know, our entire starting midfield was all Division I commits. And then our attack was, you know, Treber going to Tufts, and a player going to Bentley. And then we had Owen Murphy, who was the freshman who was already committed to Hopkins before he even stepped foot in high school at Medfield. So just a very interesting dynamic that was going on there. And yeah, I got to spend a season with him as an assistant. So I went from a head coach back down to an assistant for 1 year. But I will say learning under John was awesome, just because the culture. So much culture, just learning from him as far as, and you know, and I think that's part of the reason why they're so successful is just, he maintains a culture of hard work and understanding of the game, and it just gets passed down. And so the kids are just ready to go every year and pick up where they left off. And so that was the first thing I tried to bring when I showed up at Milton, was a lot of the cultural aspects that I learned from Coach Isaf.
Coach, you had a great career at Rivers, grew up in Westford, Mass.
Yeah, Westford, Mass.
And all kinds of points, graduated in 2007. What was your recruiting process like back then? You also were a three-sport athlete. You played football, basketball, and lacrosse.
Yep.
So you've got to be a big fan of multi-sport athletes.
Absolutely.
What was your experience, and how did you end up at Hopkins?
Yeah, grew up in Westford. So my dad's from Long Island. He was the captain of his high school team at Harbor Fields High School in Long Island, and they won a state championship, not a league championship together. So he always, you know, had a love for the game and passed that on to me. And then I don't know why I'm starting here, because you mentioned Westford. So I had to bring this up. So I started playing for Chelmsford youth program back in the day. And then because Westford didn't have a program. And so my dad got together with Gus Bickford and another guy and basically started the whole program in the town of Westford, because we didn't have one. So that was just like the early stages. My freshman year at Westford Academy was the first inaugural varsity season at Westford Academy. Did two years there. And then ended up at Rivers, partly because of Justin Walker, you know, reaching out and wanting, courting me there. And I looked at it as an opportunity to basically do an extra year. I saw the recruiting scene and was like, man, if I could, you're telling me I have the opportunity to repeat sophomore year and do an extra year of high school lacrosse and sports. I was like, sign me up. This is a no brainer. And I knew it was going to help, in the recruiting world, I wanted to play at the highest level I could possibly get to. Basically because I'd repeated that year, I went and did, a top 205. I did top 205, after my sophomore year at Westford Academy, and I ended up cracking a rib and it didn't finish it out well. And it was a really good learning experience for me. But then I went back down after I finished my sophomore year at Rivers, and I got to go back and be another, I got to basically be a rising junior again, and went down with a lot more confidence. And I played really well. Coach DeLuca actually was my, my personal coach, like our team coach on the, at top 205. And, I played really well at the event, and I went to the All-Star game, and I was actually one of the only kids who was a rising junior at the All-Star game at top 205. Most of the kids were seniors or rising seniors. And that just sparked a lot of the recruitment. So right after playing in that, All-Star game at top 205, I was getting letters from a number of schools. And you know, I had it narrowed down to a group of schools that I really liked. My dad went to Virginia back in the day, and he went to, you know, part of the reason he chose Virginia was because of the lacrosse program. He wanted to play lacrosse there. He got into engineering and never ended up showing up to practice and doing anything there. But I always wanted to go to Virginia. So when they started recruiting me, I was very into that idea and thought I was going to end up going to Virginia really most of the time. But after visiting, a lot of schools, so, you know, I mean, it wasn't a lot of Justin Walker. It wasn't a lot of what I did during the season at Rivers. It really was, you know, a few events I did in the summer and that one, you know, that one All-Star game at top 205 really sparked everything. I spent that year, my junior year, kind of going to different schools, and basically my football coach always told me, don't go to a school that you could get into if you had just applied. And he was like, it'd be a shame. It'd be, you know, waste of all the hard work and your ability as a lacrosse player to go to a school that you could just apply to as a student and get in. And he goes, use lacrosse to like propel you forward, like go to a school that you couldn't get into. And so I, you know, that resonated with me. I didn't really understand it, you know, until I got my diploma. And rolled it out on the table and saw my name on the Johns Hopkins diploma. And I was like, I get it now. I get why my football coach wanted me to do this, because, you know, lacrosse really helped me get that diploma. And I was really proud of it. And it still am very, really proud of graduating from Johns Hopkins. I never would have had the chance to get that education had I not, you know, used lacrosse to pursue an education. So I got invited to Jake Reed's Blue Chip Camp over the course of the year that my junior year, and basically Max and Nixon were like, you should wait. You should go to that event rather than make a decision. So I was close to either pulling the trigger at Virginia or Towson, and then decided to just hold off and to go wait for the summer. And most of the kids in my class were already committing. You know, most of the top players were committing in the winter of my junior year at that time. That was kind of the time frame. And I was sort of late, because I waited and wanted to go to this camp, and I knew all the coaches were going to be there, and I hadn't spoken to Hopkins at all. I went down there and I broke my thumb in the first game, and my thumb was a mess. And for some reason, obviously I knew how important it was, and I was like, just tape it up. I got to go play. And, I ended up just trying to get to the net a lot harder than looking for outside shooting opportunities, because I couldn't really shoot because of my thumb. So I was really grinding my way to the net, and I guess it got caught every coach's eye, because after that camp, on July 1st, I had a ton of offers, and I had like 13 offers the next day. My parents weren't down there. My uncle lives in Baltimore, and he brought me basically to my first visit. And a few weeks later, I told my parents, you got to come down. We got to visit with, and so the parents went down later, and the next thing, you know, that's where I wanted to go. And then the rest is history. So
are you a yeller in game?
I don't know. I would say I can be a yeller in practice. I'd say games. I'm an offensive guy, so I'm not a, you know, and I can coach the defense because I learned how to play defense from Coach Petromala. You know, I was an attackman when I showed up there, and the first thing they did was move me to midfield. And my first fall ball, I was playing with Rabel and Pizer was my line mates for like the first beginning of fall ball. And they do that on purpose to like get the young guys up to speed. So they purposely put young guys with older guys. And I thought I was going to be like a starting midfielder until the end of fall ball. Then I realized that was just for training. And I got bumped down the roster a little bit, but then we had an injury. Boland had a reason he couldn't play. And the next thing you know, they needed an attackman, and then they switched me back to attack, which I was happy with. And then I was an attackman for that year that we went to the championship. And then as soon as that was over, I went right back to playing midfield, which I was upset about because I then was like, crap, I didn't really learn how to play midfield because I switched back to attack. And now I'm a sophomore and I feel like I'm a freshman when it comes to playing midfield at this level. So I definitely wasn't Petro's favorite player to coach because I was an attackman who was running around trying to just do my best. Boy, did I not know much about defense. But by the time I finished there, I played midfield the rest of my career. And so by the time I left, I finally knew how to play defense and understood the concepts of team defense. So I can coach it on a team level, but my mind is definitely on offense. So I may yell more on the offensive side of things and try to do my best to get kids in the right position, but it's a lot different kind of yelling. I'm certainly not one to get
in players' faces.
Yeah, I'm not one to get up. I mean, depends on what you do. If you stop playing in the middle of a drill, I'm going to lose my mind. I try to bring the player's side of it to coaching. You know, I understand I'm a young coach when I think, you know, when I look at coaching. I mean, although these days I'm dealing with some injuries, I feel like I'm an older guy nowadays, but I still think in coaching world, I'm young. And so I can relate to players on that level. And so I try to remember things I didn't like about my coaches. And I try to be a more of a player's coach when I can be, but I also have to, you know, when I got to put my foot down and get things done, you got to do it. So,
Coach, you brought up a great point in terms of how much you appreciate the education you got at John Hopkins, and I very rarely hear that. And I appreciate that because the older I've gotten, realize with my own kids,
yeah,
education is everything, right? And you made the decision when you were at Rivers, your football coach told you, and I use that same phrase with my own kids, is if lacrosse ever helps you get into a better institution, it's done its job.
Yeah, totally.
And playing on the Hopkins team, you had the right frame of mind going in, a part of a great institution, part of a great culture, national champions, the historic program. You get to play for Coach Petromala, who was one of the greatest players ever play and one of the greatest coaches ever coach. So you're in a great place. And when you played, it was a bonus, and you really had a greater appreciation for that. And I think that message, your message and your story really needs to be told more.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly think it's something that, you know, and I think the lacrosse world in general right now is there's a lot of kids who are chasing education. And I think that's why the Ivy League, and, you know, we were talking about this a little bit before we got started, you know, and I think, you know, the Ivy League is, you know, 2 years off. They haven't had a season in 2 years, and yet they pick up where they are right now. And it's like, holy crap, there's so much talent in the Ivy Leagues. And it's because these kids, they want to get education. They realize, hey, you know, I'm a lacrosse player, but I think they also realize that there's a bigger thing to it, and where they go to school matters, and they want to go to the best schools.
Yeah. It actually came out this week that the Ivy Leagues accepted the least amount of applicants in the history of the schools, which is crazy when you think about it. It's actually NESCAC, some teams are releasing that, but that's generally the trend for the higher end academic schools. And I think that message is cannot be communicated enough, that if lacrosse gets you in a better school, that's what it's for. You know, I think a lot of people are chasing scholarships and chasing money and all these things, but really what you should be chasing is opportunity. Mm-hmm. And the academics that the schools offer is absolutely that. I mean, that's how I shouldn't have gotten to Clark. I'm an idiot. I shouldn't have gotten to Clark at all. I'm lucky to have gone there, you know, but I appreciate it, you know?
Yeah. I feel the same way. Like I feel like I, you know, now I like to be a little bit more prideful about it and say, oh yeah, I did belong there. But I mean, really, back in the day, my mind was like, holy crap, I don't belong here. What am I doing here? Like as a student, I'm like,
yeah,
way above my head. But Petro, you know, saw that I could help the team, and he believed in me, and he helped me along the way, and he provided, you know, resources to help get through school. And there by no way, shape, or form are we being like, you know, was school easier for us? You know, the teachers were, Hopkins is a cutthroat school, and teachers sometimes were almost, you know, harder on us because we were the lacrosse players, and they knew we got in because of lacrosse and things like that. But we had to battle through it, but. I agree that this message is so important for kids to hear. And I don't think I'm a head coach at Milton without a diploma from Johns Hopkins.
If the Big Ten or the ACC conference canceled their seasons last year, how many players you think they would have lost? How many players did Yale, Harvard, Brown, Dartmouth, Penn, Princeton lose due to the pandemic? Notwithstanding having a fifth year, because Ivies don't allow a fifth year. They did make an exception to the rule this past year, but nobody left the Ivies knowing they weren't going to have a season. They might have taken the semester off, which a number of players did, but the importance of education.
Right. And you can see the kids stayed, and they kept that. They realized, hey, I'm missing an opportunity to play lacrosse, but I'm still here for school, and I'm still maintaining this. And a lot of them felt like it was better to stay and get their diploma from these great Ivy League schools than leave and get years of eligibility elsewhere. So,
and I think that's one of the reasons why they're doing so well, though. Even though they didn't play, they still were together. They were still doing lifts. Yeah. They were still doing Zooms. They were, you know, playing summer lacrosse together. They had a fall ball season, so they didn't go anywhere. They were always still there.
Right.
The only thing they didn't have, they weren't out in the field.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message. The Men's Lacrosse Championships, where speed and power meets precision and creativity. And they give it everything they got, from face-off to the final whistle. Go big for every goal. Go beyond your limits and enter the NCAA universe. The Men's Lacrosse Championships, May 28th through 30th at Rentschler Field in East Hartford, Connecticut. Get your seats today at ncaa.com/mlacrosse.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
We're going to change gears now and talk a little bit about Milton Academy and what it means to you to be the head coach at Milton Academy and what's so special about Milton Academy.
Yeah, so I got to give a shout out to my guy, Owen Martinson. I'd never be at Milton Academy if it wasn't for Owen, who I coached at Dexter. Owen Martinson was sort of the initiator, the party starter to Pat Frazier's big shot and the finish at the end when I was at Dexter, who ended up playing at Hopkins. But then, you know, after my first year coaching there, Owen actually left and went to Milton. I did another year at Dexter, and then I went over to Medfield with Coach Ice. And it was not long after we won that state championship, the third one in a row. And then all of a sudden I'm getting a call from Owen Martinson, and he's saying, "Hey, what do you feel about coaching at Milton Academy?" And me being a Rivers alum and remembering playing against the Milton Academy team that showed up with a couple kids wearing popped collars underneath their jerseys. That's all I kept thinking about. And I was like, no chance. I told Owen, I said, "Sorry, I have no interest. I think I'm good where I'm at right now. We're winning championships at Medfield. I got a good thing going." And I was like, "I'm not even interested." And then sure enough, you know, I get a call from his dad, and then I get a call from the AD, and he's like, "You know, why don't you come in and meet some people, and we'll talk more about it." And I got to a point where I said, "You know, you're right. I should probably look into this opportunity a little bit more." And at the time, Coach Ice was actually, and I don't know if this is, I might be speaking too much here, but he thought he was going to go watch his son play at Ithaca. And so he was sort of thinking about passing the torch down to me at Medfield. And then his son stopped playing at Ithaca. So he decided, "Oh, I'm going to stay. I'm not going anywhere." And so for me, all of a sudden I was hoping for this head coaching opportunity at Medfield. And then all of a sudden that was gone. And then now this Milton opportunity was popping up. And after meeting people over there, meeting the AD, got along with him great. Just got to meet and really liked the people that I was meeting and the character and the quality of people. And I said, "Okay, I can see myself coaching here." And I was still working full time for 3D. So I was working, in the Boston office and coaching at Milton, which was a much better commute. I was living in Southeast, so going down to Milton was a 15, 20 minute ride, and as opposed to driving out to Medfield. So really, really appreciated that element of it. But I also liked the idea of building something. And that was something that really drew me in. Was Milton Academy was not in a good place, record wise, as a lacrosse program in the ISL. They had some seasons where they were towards the bottom of the ISL. And so I looked at it as, "Hey, instead of inheriting a program that I'm trying not to screw up, I have a chance to build something from the ground up and put my name on it and stuff like that." So, and I knew it was going to be a challenge, complete challenge. But one of the things I love about coaching at Milton is what I'm selling to kids, when I'm trying to encourage a kid to look at Milton, is exactly what we were just talking about, which is an education. And I think Milton Academy is one of the top, if not the top education you can get in the ISL. And that's the piece I like to talk about a lot, because it's really what's amazing about it. I mean, Milton Academy is one of the most diverse campuses that you'll find. It's 50% boarding and 50% day. So right there alone, it's different than most boarding schools. It's different than most day schools. There's 350 boarders and there's 350 day students. So it's just, and then you get kids from all over the globe. I mean, literally all over the globe and all continents. And, you know, and ethnicities and, economic backgrounds. And it's just creates a really interesting classroom environment. For me, it's a good fit, because from what I've learned and my experience at Hopkins and learning from my football coach, and now I'm trying to tell kids, use lacrosse to get you into a school that you couldn't get into, So
you're the perfect example. I mean, you lived it. So, more kids should take, and I know they are taking your advice, and more kids are taking that route because they understand how important the academic piece is. And that's why the ISL has exploded on the lacrosse side. That's my feeling anyways. I mean, any of those teams today versus 10 years ago can beat anybody. And the players that are coming out of the ISL lacrosse league are tremendous student athletes too.
Totally.
They're going to the Ivy League schools. They're going to John Hopkins. They're going to a lot of very good, very, very good schools. And the reason for that is they know how to play lacrosse, but they've taken this study seriously.
Totally.
We did our ISL preview last week on the podcast with Mike Z. And one of the things that kind of stood out, I checked around on the internet to see what people thought of it. And they were just like, "Wow, they really concentrated on a lot of these teams and kind of missed out on these other teams." The rabidness of the fan base for ISL content is insane. It is like you have fans all over the place that want to know what's going on in your league. How is that a newer development, or is that something that kind of has been building for a while for you guys?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, it definitely feels newer as far as like the attention that the league is getting from fans and from just lacrosse personnel. But I think it's because of it's been building, right? You know, I think this playoff is something that, and then sure, you know, and then the playoffs disappears and it becomes, now there's even more like mystique around it, right? And it took, you know, being in the coaches meetings for ISL coaches meetings, I've been in those meetings for 6 years. And it's funny, this is my sixth year coaching, but it's really my fifth season, right? So something to keep in mind. But like, you know, I'm in the coaches meetings and we were, the first couple of meetings, we tried to talk about playoffs and it kept getting shut down, you know, and the heads of school, the athletic directors didn't really want to talk about playoffs. And we kept pushing and we kept having to come up with a system that was, and so as the coaches, and I really got to tip my hat to Adam White over at St. Seb's, really spearheaded the formation of what the playoffs are. And then we all got behind it and we all pushed on our, you know, our ADs and our heads of school. And luckily I have a head of school. I don't know if you guys know this, Todd Bland. So Todd Bland played at St. George's, went on to play at Bowdoin, ended up being an All-American, and then got to be a head coach at Belmont Hill before he worked his way, you know, into being a head of a school. So he's been very supportive of me, which was another reason why I really wanted the job and ended up really, you know, finding it a good fit at Milton, because I got a head of school who understands the game and understands, you know, what I'm going through and can come down and visit the field and we can talk about the game and at a high level. Which was nice. But so he was on board for the playoffs and just getting the playoffs off the ground and getting okay just created a lot of excitement. And I know everyone was like, wow, this is going to make for some really fun end of the year game. Because prior to that, you were playing, you know, a season and you're just trying to win every single game because you want the best record you possibly can have. And that made it tough towards the end of the season. It wasn't this play your best lacrosse at the most important time. And that was the thing that we were missing in the ISL. So now we have an opportunity, and no matter where you finish, you know, you might be in the top half or you might be in the bottom half, regardless, you're going into a win, move on, lose, go home scenario. And so that's just, it's going to create really, the setup is going to create really evenly matched games and good competition. So it doesn't matter whether you're watching the top half tournament, the bottom half tournament, it's going to be good lacrosse to watch. They're going to be good matchups and the atmosphere is going to be awesome because of the ramifications of what's on the line.
What I love about the playoffs, to your point, is the buildup. And as a coach, now your goal is, guys, you know, all right, we may have lost today, but we got better. We're better today than we were yesterday. The most important thing is we want to have progression. We want to develop as a team.
Right.
And when the playoffs come, we want to be playing at our best.
Definitely.
You know, you lost a game during in the middle of the year. Well, you lose one game and you feel like the whole season's over because you've got 7 games left, but you're not going to win the title with just one loss. You might have to go undefeated.
Totally. It takes that pressure off of every single game, but also going to add a lot of pressure towards the end of the year, which is, I mean, that's how the game's played at the next level, right? And you're trying to make playoffs and you're trying to play your best ball in playoffs.
And you lived it in terms of you got killed by the greatest team, college lacrosse team during the regular season, Duke. And then at Gillette, which was a great experience for you, I'm sure, coming from Westford, Mass.
It was.
Must have been tremendous with family and friends in the stands. But then you end up beating them, having lost to them by.
Yeah, it felt like the national championship.
Right.
We threw our gloves all over the field and threw our equipment around.
And that's what's great about the ISL.
Like we won.
The ISL tournament now is if you lose to Belmont Hill during the regular season, let's go, boys.
You might get a second chance at them.
Yeah.
And that creates, yeah, and that's awesome. I mean, I think that's kind of, you know, has definitely contributed to, you know, to answer Kyle's question, to the excitement about the ISL and people really caring about what's going on.
At the summer tournaments now, you see all these private school coaches, but ISL coaches watching the younger kids. You have these prep school showcases now where 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders are going to be showcased in front of prep schools because they're looking at prep schools. It's just the cycle. It's just incredible what's happening.
Right. And that didn't exist 3D started doing it, I want to say 5, maybe 6 years ago. And as soon as they started doing it, it caught on like wildfire. And now there's other companies trying to do it. And it helps, as a private school coach who needs to find particular athletes, it helps us find families that are looking for private schools. And so it really, rather than just going and watching a club scene and being like, trying to convince, put the idea in their head of private school in the first place, you're already talking to a family who's searching for a secondary school. But I think all of that has contributed, that now there's so much talent. I mean, we talk about it all the time as coaches and people who used to play in the ISL. I mean, it's gotten so much better. It's crazy. I mean, all the sports, the football is unbelievable. When I get to coach football now, that's one of the things I love about coaching at Milton is I'm now not just doing lacrosse year round, like I was at 3D. I'm coaching football in the fall and I was coaching freshman basketball my first year. Now I'm part of ski team, but, I get to do other things. But all the sports, I look at the basketball scene in the ISL, it's like, it is not what it used to be. And all the sports, and lacrosse is right there. It is so much more talented than it used to be 10 years ago. It's crazy.
And what really amazes me is there is a huge ticket price for that education, and I'm not knocking it, but you've got more and more kids looking at the ISL schools and wanting to attend those schools, but they understand that it's going to cost them a great deal of money to get them through 4 or 5 or 6, some schools start in the 7th grade and go all the way till 8th grade, but they realize it's an investment, in their child, and it's a great investment long term.
Right. Totally. And those are the conversations that, I'm having with players all the time. So it's good to see that there's families that are chasing education and value those types of things. And the ISL is just, it's exploded. It's in all sports. So
I just wanted to touch on some of the players on your team. I know two of them pretty well.
Yep.
Mike Hanlon, I actually had the pleasure of coaching down at the IL event in the fall. Excellent kind of two-way guy, gets his shot off really well, gets down the alley. And also Will Lavely, who is, I can't believe he's a sophomore.
I know.
Because he's huge.
Big guy. And he wasn't always a big guy. So he repeated his freshman year, or basically went to Fessenden through 9th grade and then came to Milton as a 9th grader. And it was important for him to do because back in the, it was funny, but when he was a 9th grader at Fessenden, we were talking about him being too small. And then all of a sudden, he comes to, we got him. And I remember him, looking at Milton and talking to him before he came, and he was still that small guy. And then, and then he's at Milton and I'm like, who's this guy?
Is that the same thing?
Yeah. And then now he's even bigger and he's still filling out. I mean, he's still
It happened over one summer. Cause I saw him early in the summer and then I saw him later in the summer and I was like, who's that?
Yeah.
Like, he's not the same kid.
And I like it. I mean, it reminds me of Jameson Kester, a Hopkins faceoff guy back in 07, who was, 6'4", just big, strong guy, facing off against this, mostly smaller guys, but Will can really face off. He puts a lot of energy into it and, and he's been working at it for a long time. We knew, he was going to come around. And he took all of our faceoffs last year as a freshman, really. I mean, most of them. And did a really good job. But Mike Hanlon, off to a good start this year. We need him to be a stud. We need him to make big plays for us out of the midfield. And he's got a shot that is uncanny. It's better than most kids' a shooting ability. I wish he would continue to advance his different release points and where he's shooting, but man, he can really bring it. He's got an ability and he's not a huge guy, he's a faster player type of lacrosse player, but he's got mechanics that just, he knows how to put some torque on it. And, so having him in a man up is great. And then having him ability to dodge, with his quickness and, his speed helps a lot, and that's the thing we've been working on heavily this season is now that he's like our guy that we need to make a lot of plays and also having injuries that we have, he's got a little bit more attention. We've been talking a lot about, being able to read the slides and make the right decision and rather than trying to dodge two guys and crank a shot off, which isn't very successful versus good defenses, you know, bouncing and getting rid of that ball and to the backside of the play and getting your teammates involved based on the work he's doing. And he's coming a long way in that. So he's getting better. And
it's actually exactly the thing that I told him when I was coaching him. Yeah. I think it's like, when you get this, go. When you don't have it, bang it.
Yeah. So. And so, I mean, he's really mixes what we ideally want is him not to be the initiator. We'd like him to get the ball kicked to him, you know, on the backside and have him have a one-on-one opportunity to get a shot off. You know, and we need him to do some initiating too. And so just teaching him, you know, when you're initiating, that's when you're thinking, draw the slide and move the ball more. And then work off ball to get that secondary dodge opportunity. That's where he's going to really thrive.
You have like the kid going to Wesleyan's pretty good.
Yeah. Luca Casagrande is a big reason why our culture is where it's at right now. I mean, as a leader, he's as good as it gets. And just really, I mean, he started for us every game as a freshman. You know, he was that ready. And he was, as a freshman, he might have been the most solid defenseman we had. Just most consistent. You know, he didn't get you know an opportunity to play at Division I. But I also think he's going to be a D3 menace, you know, and he's going to be a hell of a player. We got kids from all over. We got so Murphy McLaughlin, kid committed to BU, is a stud basketball player.
Wow.
And he wasn't the starting point guard for us this year. We had another kid who was really good, but he was a varsity basketball player as a freshman at Milton, which is no joke. And he's a really smart, good basketball player. And then we got another kid, Wayne Simon, who's 6'6" and comes from upstate New York, played Orange Crush. And he's one of our starting poles. Hopefully super smart kid. Hopefully
going to 6'6".
Yeah. And he can move too at 6'6". So, you know, and I think he's a prime NESCAC stud, but you know, he's also looking at MIT pretty heavily. We'll see if he can get in there. As you know, that's
we just had coach in
the big for you, the big roadblock.
Tyler.
Yeah. Tyler. Okay.
All right. That's going to do it. Coach, thanks for coming in. Jordan, Jack, at least appreciate it.
Yeah. Appreciate you having me. This was fun.
And we want to thank you again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journals, Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piatelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time. And also another shout out to our producer, Steve Safran, for all of his efforts.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.